And we welcome to the studio what we've been promising all afternoon, William Intrilligator, conductor of the Dubuque Symphony Orchestra. William, thank you so much for stopping by today.
My pleasure, Mindy. I'm happy to be here.
Well, it's such a thrill to meet you. I've been producing Dubuque Symphony Orchestra for a number of years now, so I read your name all the time.
Right.
So as always, it is nice to put the face with the voice and the conducting skills and the music that I hear. So thank you again. I know you're here in the cities doing a lot of other stops, so thank you for making this one of them.
Oh, my pleasure. And, you know, you're on the radio all the time, so you probably have thousands of listeners who would love to put your face with the name too, but
only if I can guide it somewhat. Can you Photoshop suggestion? Anyway, it's just lovely that you had some time to pop in, because you've got a really amazing concert coming up next weekend.
Right.
I was just looking at this as I'm planning out my chat track, and this is going to be one that's going to be a little more complicated for me,
which is great.
I love it.
It's not your typical overture, concerto, intermission, symphony kind of program. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're just going to kind of, I think, dive right in and talk about it. But I thought first, if there were others out there who also probably, like me, had heard your name, maybe has not made it up to Dubuque to see your fabulous symphony orchestra and hear a concert, that we could start by sort of introducing you to our listeners. And so, of course, I went back and kind of read a little bit about you. But one thing I didn't have to read to know about is that you are a very innovative programmer.
Oh.
You really like to pull music from a lot of different places, and you are not afraid to cross genres, which I totally love.
Yep, that is really true. But thank you for that. I take that as a compliment. It's really great that we have this longtime partnership with WVIK and the Dubuque Symphony Orchestra, and we're very proud of that. We're delighted that you rebroadcast our performances and have been doing so for so many years. And I'm just really happy to be here in the studio today and have a chance to get to know you and you know, tell you a little bit more about the Dubuque Symphony Orchestra. And of course, many of your listeners who might be in the Quad Cities area, they have orchestras that they can hear here, right here. The Dubuque Symphony Orchestra is a little gem. And so many times we hear from people who come up and say, you know, I wasn't sure what to expect, but my goodness, you know, we've been coming to the Chicago Symphony for 30 years, and now we came here and it was, you know, really wonderful. And so we are very lucky. We have musicians from a wide range. Some of them are right in Dubuque. Some of them are from Madison, Chicago, Iowa City and Coralville, Cedar Rapids. We have some musicians who come as far as from Minneapolis and other places like that. And the musicians are really dedicated, and they also have that innovative spirit that you were talking about. Last month, we had a set of concerts in a really cool theater in a casino in Dubuque. And we partnered with members of rock bands in Dubuque. And it's become a hugely popular program that we do every year. And the musicians, I wasn't sure the first time we did that whether they would embrace that type of thing, but they did. In fact, one of the most interesting things was the first year we did that, about 5 years ago, the very next more traditional concert that we have, part of our classics series, as we call it in Dubuque, the orchestra played Beethoven's Fifth, and I can't tell you how much more the musicians were like just giving their all in that Beethoven after having performed that rock and roll concert. It somehow inspired them. And so, you know, a lot of the classical musicians that are playing in symphony orchestras, such as Dubuque Symphony, even the Quad City Symphony too, they can play in a wide range of genres. And it's fun to program things that are a little more untraditional, like the concert we have, not this weekend, but next weekend, where we have the Iowa premiere of a piece written by one of our violists, Paul Price Brenner. Paul is a wonderful musician, a violist who's in the orchestra with us, and also a teacher in the schools and at the college level. And he's written a beautiful symphonia for strings that was adapted from two movements from his string quartet. And it's a gorgeous little 6.5 minute piece, and I'm so excited to feature someone from our own orchestra as a composer. Now, it's a little bit intimidating as a conductor having the composer right there in the orchestra.
Sure.
You know, it's like Beethoven or even Stravinsky's not right there saying, take it a little faster, or take it a little, you know, it's like that could happen. Also on that same program, we're doing another piece for strings, but strings and marimba solo by the French composer Emmanuel Séjourné. It's actually in the percussion world, this piece has become extremely popular. It's his concerto for marimba and strings. And it's the first time we're performing it, and we have the great fortune to have a wonderful percussionist in the Dubuque Symphony Orchestra by the name of Keith Lienert. He's our principal percussion, and he will be featured in this beautiful piece. As I said, it's for marimba and strings. How appropriate that you were playing that duo for marimba and harp before we started the interview. But I'm not sure if many of your listeners understand the place that marimba has now in the percussion world, because marimba has become, in effect, the solo instrument for the orchestral percussionist. They have numerous solo pieces and concerto pieces being written for marimba, as well as adapting pieces by Bach and others performed on marimba. And there's nothing like seeing one of those great performances on the instrument that has a sort of mesmerizing sound, and then where the players have to manipulate 2, 4, sometimes 6 mallets at a time. And so that Séjourné piece is gorgeous, and I'm looking forward to that too.
Yeah, and the cool thing about a marimba piece, you know, here again we're talking about an instrument that has some very definite folk roots, and now it's sort of made that crossover into being an accepted instrument in the classical music world.
That's a really good point, Mindy, because it really does have a sort of, I don't know, earthy, natural, you know, almost like an African instrument kind of sound to it in its essence. It's very, you know, it has that sort of...
Almost primal.
Primal, yeah. Yes. Primal. But now, like you said, it's become accepted in the classical world. So that's a really good point.
Well, I always love pieces like that where it kind of starts off, you know, somebody cocked an eyebrow at one time going, harmonica with orchestra?
But it happens.
But it works.
Yeah, it works.
And same thing with marimba. And this is going to be a really exciting piece, especially for what you just described, William, as the visual element of watching this percussionist deftly manage multiple mallets in each hand and striking these notes to give this piece almost a carnivalesque type of feeling to it. I mean, the marimba really adds that jaunty sense of good fun.
It does. And this piece manages to ride a fine line between being fun, having some music that's kind of fast-paced and unusual meters and fun, as well as just gorgeous, beautiful parts. And I was speaking to someone who was saying they were listening to that Séjourné marimba concerto and they were in tears. It is a gorgeous piece. And it's really nice that generally when I am programming newer pieces, I try to make sure that it's going to be audience friendly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and the piece you were mentioning before that also, I was listening to, I think I got a little bit of like a 49-50 minute segment that we can certainly share
Paul's
with our
piece, yeah,
audience of Paul's work. And you're right. I mean, this is a gorgeous sinfonia. And I always like that too. When, I mean, he started composing at a very early age, correct?
That's
right. And then he went on to win like back-to-back-to-back-to-back composition contests when he was in high school.
I know, it's amazing, right?
Boy, I really feel like an underachiever.
No.
But,
no.
You know, it's so cool that he writes a piece like this. As you mentioned, it was fleshed out as a chamber work. Mm-hmm. And then at some point, I love it when composers sort of revisit a work. It for some reason, it doesn't leave them, or it feels like it maybe wasn't quite fully fleshed out,
yes,
or finished, or maybe it could take on a new life of its, mm-hmm, own. So they go back and then orchestrate it.
Yeah. You know, Paul is so talented. I've looked at a variety of his scores, and he has a wide range, and I'm looking forward to doing even more of his pieces with the Dubuque Symphony Orchestra in future seasons. We did a piece of his on an outdoor concert this past summer called Calliope. It was a little lighter and fun. It was great. This sinfonia is, you know, not heavy at all, but it's, I would say, a more sort of concert hall piece, mm-hmm, a more serious piece. And some of his scores are for large orchestra and involve unusual techniques. He's really talented, and so we're excited to feature him. You know, it's so funny, Mindy, you were talking about composers going back to pieces they had written earlier, because that ties in perfectly with another piece on the program. Mendelssohn's Italian Symphony.
And what an awesome concert pleaser and crowd pleaser this work is.
Right, exactly.
You know, there's Mendelssohn in, what, 1830. He's a guy in his very early 20s, just hitting legal age here.
Exactly, right.
And this was like the second leg of his grand European tour.
Yes.
He'd gone to Scotland the year before.
Right.
So here he is now in Italy. So lay the groundwork for us, William.
Well, he was a little bit shocked at first. First place he stopped was Venice, and he loved it. Who doesn't love Venice, right? When he got down to places like Rome and Naples, he was a little bit more shocked at some of the things he saw, and some of that is reflected in, for instance, the last movement, the Tarantella. Saltarello. It's a dance he witnessed there, and it's just such a wonderful piece. As you said, he was just in his early 20s and had this impression from Italy and had this commission from the London Symphony and put the two together. I have a little theory about that too, because it sounds to me like the third movement of this symphony is not as much Italian. I don't know, maybe some of your listeners would argue with me, but the third movement of Mendelssohn's Italian Symphony sounds more like he was remembering that this commission was for English audiences in the London Symphony. But the rewrite comes from the next year. After the premiere in 1833 in London, which was a success, he left the score and parts there. And unbeknownst to him, after he went back to Germany, the London Symphony played it a few more times. But he was apparently not fully happy with it. So he started rewriting it. And he started rewriting the second, third, and fourth movements. He completely rewrote those. And he never got around to rewriting the first movement because he said that it would basically mean he'd have to sort of throw out the whole thing. Now, modern audiences hear that and scratch their head because the whole symphony seems so perfect. Why would he want to rewrite any of it? And I've studied the revisions of the second, third, and fourth movement, and I have to say some of them are good, but I kind of like the original. So it's one of those questions. You know, it's interesting because apparently he was so unhappy with that original version, which we all now play, which because he left it in London, the people there ended up, you know, publishing it after his death posthumously, and he never called it the Italian Symphony. But it's basically we're all playing this piece that Mendelssohn didn't want us to know. He didn't want us to even know about it. He wanted it to sort of end up not being published as one of his published symphonies.
Well, and again, I love the fact that, you know, marketing stepped in and went, okay, Italian Symphony.
Oh, yeah.
This was not.
Just like the Moonlight Sonata, exactly. And so many others. Yep.
It sells so much better. And indeed, who listening to this symphony would not think of, you know, sun-drenched Italian countrysides, especially in the, as you were mentioning, the first and the final movement.
Oh, yes.
I mean, this just screams Italy.
Oh, yeah. And in the second movement, it really has that sort of processional. He visited one of the chapels in the Vatican and was inspired by some what he saw there. And it has that sort of, I don't know, early Gregorian kind of feel. And there's a walking bass, almost like, you know, some sort of procession. You know? So, and interestingly, in the revised version, there are aspects of that that are even more pronounced in terms of it's sort of a sacred kind of feel to it. But yeah, it definitely sounds like Italy, doesn't it?
It does.
It doesn't sound like music that needs a revision.
Oh, not at all. And that was surprising to me as well, that when you listen to the Italian Symphony, we're going to hear just a little bit of the Saltarello here. As a reminder, you're listening to Perspective. Thank you for tuning in this afternoon. I'm your host, Mindy Heisel, sitting in with me this afternoon, the conductor of the Dubuque Symphony Orchestra, William Intrilligator. Been hoping to meet William for a long time now. He had business here in the Quad Cities. Was just a perfect karmic arc that he had time to come in here and sit down. We're talking about the Dubuque Symphony Orchestra's concert next weekend. So we want to play a little bit of the Saltarello for you from Mendelssohn's Italian Symphony. This is the beginning of the fourth movement. Thank you. almost hate to cut it off like you're getting into the really good stuff, but that's what you're going to be going to the concert for next weekend, right?
That's right. We can't give it all away here.
Absolutely. We've got so much more to get to, too. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you know, going back to Mendelssohn again, William, it's amazing to me that a symphony that seems to roll off almost like it's being written and played in the moment. I mean, it's almost the very definition of spontaneity.
Yes.
And almost an effortless kind of charm and liveliness that, as you were just telling us, this really caused Mendelssohn some sleepless nights. He really sweated over this
work. He really did. You know, and another cool thing about this symphony, which I sometimes forget, but then I was like, you know, this is the only symphony that I'm aware of, and I'm pretty well versed in symphonies, that starts in a major key and ends in a minor key. Usually it starts in major and ends in major, or starts in minor and ends in major. But this is the only time where you have that wonderful opening of the first movement, ba-da-dum, da-da-dum, and then it ends in minor with this, albeit, you know, kind of a not super dark minor. It's an excited, you know, gypsy, but tarantella getting the spider bite poison out of you dance.
Yeah.
Dance. You know, A minor is not the darkest of minors.
Well, again, it's going back to kind of that kind of rapturous sort of fast kind of dancing that it almost allows you to kind of transcend or ascend to an almost spiritual level, even though it's a very of the earth kind of dance.
Like a whirling dervish. I like
thank
that.
Thank you. Exactly. Yes. Okay, so that's one of the treats you're going to get to hear when you get your tickets. Go to DubuqueSymphony.org. Get on it right now. They've got two performances next weekend. And as William has been describing, there's going to be just this amazing amalgam of music that is written for an instrument you don't always get to hear in the concert hall, marimba with orchestra, a piece that's was written literally right now in the time that we live in. It was revised from an earlier work, but still, this is a composer that's living, breathing, writing right now in the times that we all live in. And then you're going to hear some of the great staples in classical repertory.
That's true.
And that has to lead us then, of course, to Schubert and
Schubert
Schumann.
And Schumann. We have both of them on this program.
Yeah, you picked three classical giants here,
I
William.
Did. Well, you know, Schumann and Mendelssohn go so well together because they knew each other. And Mendelssohn actually did some of the premieres of Schumann's symphonies and so forth in Leipzig. The Schubert that we're doing is just a very short, beautiful ballet music from Rosamunde. And one of the things we're doing with the Dubuque Symphony Orchestra all season long is exploring the combination of art forms and the intersection of music, orchestral music, with other art forms. And so in this case, dance. We have the last movement of the Mendelssohn, which we've been talking about, is a dance. And we also have the ballet music of Schubert. So we're a little bit exploring the ways that orchestras can really have kind of a intersection of other kinds of art forms, whether it's dance. We had on our first program of the year, we had music inspired by the theater, including Shakespeare's works. For the concert next month, we have music inspired by photography, music inspired by literature, the 1001 Arabian Nights when we do Scheherazade, and music inspired by film with some music by John Williams. And so it's we're just kind of doing different arts or disciplines and orchestral music together. And so that's one of the reasons we're doing the Schubert piece. And then the Schumann I'm really excited about. We're doing Schumann's Konzertstück for four horns and orchestra. So just picture four solo French horns in front of the orchestra. And it's kind of maybe hard to imagine where Schumann got the idea for this. But it is a unique piece, and it is a fantastic piece. And I understand you have a clip of the opening to share.
I do. I was telling you, this was one of those pieces that, even though I was a woodwind player in my high school band, I don't believe we had four French horns. We came from a small high school. And this obviously wasn't a piece that was attempted, so I had never heard this. And I remember digging this out on an old Nonesuch LP one night back in the early days when I first started here, thinking, oh, concert piece for four horns and orchestra. This might be kind of cool. And from the opening hook, you know, I was there.
Yeah. It's like, it does grab you, doesn't it?
It really does. I mean, this is a total German romantic piece
completely.
With that opening with a very rich and almost noble sound of the horn. And what I find fascinating to think of is the time that Schubert wrote this, the horn had really kind of undergone some rather amazing changes
yes.
in how it looked and how it was being played.
Yes, but Schumann still tries to harken back to the roots of the horn.
Of you the know, hunting
the
horn.
Hunting
yes,
horns.
Exactly.
And using four, the way that they can kind of call and respond to each other sometimes is goes back to that. Those days and the early, early days, which again brings up romanticism, because the idea of being in nature, where you would hear these hunting horns in the woods, it's almost as if Schumann is bringing us into the woods.
So let's hear the opening from the concert piece for four horns and orchestra by Robert Schumann. Again, you just almost hate to interrupt that, but that's what they're going to be going to the concert for next weekend.
That's right.
And you have a great horn quartet that's actually going to be performed. This is a rock solid horn quartet.
It is. And well, we're very fortunate that two of the four members of the Uber Quartet, which is the solo group.
I love the name,
I believe they called it that before the app came along. Two of the four are regular members of our French horn section in the Dubuque Symphony Orchestra. A third is a regular substitute player. And so it's exciting. They're great musicians. These ladies, and they're based in Chicago, and, you know, it's pretty adventurous for any horn player to be willing to attempt this piece. It's very challenging, as you may have heard, even in the opening sections. Some of the horn players are playing at the extreme high end of their range. And as you said, it maybe have to do with the development of the horn at the time that Schumann wrote this, with the valves and everything else to make things possible. But it's so fiendishly hard. So when they came to me and said, we would love to do it, I was like, yes. And it had been probably 15 or 20 years since I conducted this piece. And I've always loved it.
So. Yeah, you know, it's a piece, funny you say that, William, that I really don't have a whole lot of recordings of in our library. So I'm not sure that it is probably performed and or recorded that often. Possibly for that very reason. I mean, yeah. You've got four and horn players that they get to stand up and have their shining moment here right in front of everybody.
I know.
And it's not like other concertos where we hear from the orchestra, they establish a beautiful theme. No, no, no. You get a couple of chords and boom, you got to rock this piece out.
right off the bat.
Exactly. So there we've kind of gone around in a nutshell here with, again, what is an extremely creative and a very challenging program that the Dubuque Symphony Orchestra is going to be rocking the socks off of the Five Flags Theater next weekend. So if you haven't gotten your tickets yet, you might want to get on that because it's going to be a great show. Conductor
you.
William Intrilligator has been sitting in here with me this afternoon. We've been talking about the music, and I'm always amazed, William, by how quickly time flies. You know,
it really
music
does.
Is one of those subjects that you kind of feel like once you kind of get down into the meat of a work or what was going on in the composer's life, you know, there's so much more than just sort of putting pen to paper, or I'm not really sure how composers write music now. It's probably all done on computers too.
Well, I just want to put out a special invitation to the listeners right here in the Quad Cities who maybe haven't seen the Dubuque Symphony live, but have heard us on your broadcasts all the time for years. You know, we have a wonderful hall in downtown Dubuque in the Five Flags Theater. It's over 100 years old, and one of the best things about it is that there's a sense of intimacy with the orchestra and the musicians. There's not a seat in the hall where you're very far from the orchestra, so you're right up there, and the sonic experience is very present. It's right there, which is great. And it really is not very far, and it's a great way to spend an evening or an afternoon. We have some very fine restaurants downtown now in Dubuque. And it'll make a nice little road trip for those listeners who are in the Quad Cities and kind of on the fence. We encourage you to come up and give us a listen.
Absolutely. As William said, it's a beautiful 90-minute drive here from the Quad Cities. You get to kind of head up along the river, and weather should be just fine. Looks like we're in for a nice warm-up here. Mm-hmm. It's going to feel a lot more like spring. So from a weather standpoint, probably going to be just dandy. It's next weekend. You've got two shots at it, Saturday evening at 7:30 or Sunday afternoon at 2 p.m. at the Five Flags Theater. Like you said, William, it's just a beautiful historic theater, and the sound just sort of envelops you and makes you feel absolutely wonderful. You'll come out of it transformed again, I promise you. Go see music live. There is nothing else like it in the world. William Intrilligator, thank you so much for coming in this afternoon.
Thank you, Mindy.
Come back again, will you please?
I will.
Okay, great.